Okay, well, we will get started. You'll notice that I went and dug up. I had so much fun digging up pictures of multiple businesses. I really like this idea. I think that laundry would be so much more fun if there was ice cream involved, as well as coffee. So we will, let's see, what else? We do actually have some polls. This is going to be pretty interactive. So you can hang around in the chat room. That's a good start. And then also, we will have polls that we will do. Corey's going to launch those for us through this system. And my theory is that it should be a lot of fun. If it's not being fun, then we're not doing it right. Because, I mean, business should be fun. You ought to be having some fun with what you do. So we will head to the first poll, which is going to be how many lines of income you have right now. So to answer this poll, Corey is going to launch a poll that'll open up here. And that will cover your screens, and you can vote and let us know what you think. So, do you have you started a business yet? Are you new to this, or have you got lots? Or are you one of those people that has lost count of how many businesses you have? So, is everybody voting? How are we going?
Yeah,
Any
looks like
commentary?
we've got half, 56% have voted so far. We got about a little bit more time, and you let me know when you want to close the poll.
Okay. Well, the idea is just to get a feeling for what kind of businesses you folks have right now. A lot of people kind of split two ways on this. There is the, oh my gosh, one business is more than enough for me. And then there are the people that are just they start one thing and then they start another thing and then they start another thing, and so soon they have lots of things. And I, necessarily either one is it's not that one is bad or that the other is right. It's just that we're going to talk about ways to make that work. So I think let's go ahead and close the poll and we'll move from here. All right, so the poll is closed. How'd it come out? What were our results? Report in
Okay,
for us there.
you bet. Sorry about that. 45% of people, this is the one that led the way, was had two or three, maybe four businesses. Next up, we had one business with 27%, and then five, six, a dozen, I lost count, 18%, and then 9% of people had no businesses at the current time.
Elizabeth, I see that you said you couldn't see the poll, so feel free to just pick one of those. Let us know how many businesses you have right there in the chat room, and that helps give us a feel. Interesting, isn't it, Corey? People are pretty spread out. There's some people at each level, and while the overwhelming answer is between two and four, there's still some people that are still at, well, none or one. So
We had
Elizabeth's also right there in the middle with three, so.
we had 73% of people voted on the webinar today, and we've got a good crowd. But I want to talk to those people that have five, six, a dozen potentially businesses. Oh my goodness. Now, what is your count, Becky, if I may ask real quick?
Oh my gosh. Four, right? Four. Okay, we'll count them. Liquor store, cattle ranch. I lump all the speaking and writing about small business, which includes speaking and the book and small biz survival and all of that stuff. That's all one business. So that makes three. Tourism Currents, along with Sheila Scarborough. And Leslie McClellan, so that makes four. And I realized I keep leaving off my brother and sister and I have the ranch that used to be my father's, and I keep forgetting to add that as a count of something else that I have to have to count as a business because it's a completely separate thing. So I guess I'm five.
Wow, okay, so that puts you in the 18% bracket there.
And Carrie's pointing out that she says that she has multiple streams, but all under an umbrella business, which is perfectly fine, and that's a fine way to answer this. And like my small business, speaking and writing, there's multiple streams of income there between the writing and the speaking and the other things that I do around small business. So we're going to talk about why you want to have more than one line of income, why this matters to you, and why it's a good idea to at least have lines of income, if not businesses. If you're selling, we have a liquor store, it's an actual physical building. What would we do if they actually tore up the sidewalk in front of the building or tore up the road in front of our building? If you have any kind of business that it depends on your billable hours, or any kind of business that depends on you, then you, what are you going to do if you become sick, or a family member becomes sick, or someone that depends on you gets sick? So the what ifs are kind of a real question. And then there's my personal favorite, which is, what do you do when you can't get online? See, because we all panic when we can't get online just from the sheer panic of losing connection. But realistically, so many of us, our business depends on being online. So what if we can't get online to service our customers, to talk to our customers, to make sure that we get everything taken care of? So, you know, what's your backup plan, and how do you have other lines of income? And then what if the market just shifts imperceptibly out from underneath you? If you rely on one single main product that you sell, what are you going to do as that market continues to just slowly shift away out from under you? Then how will your business adapt at that point? I see that everybody is going over in the chat room is like, okay, we can find a way to get online. Okay. Nobody's addressing, what if we get sick? What if... All the other things, you know, to heck with that. But online, we'll figure out a way to get online. So, all right. Well, the whole idea of having multiple lines of income and multiple businesses is hopefully to spread out that risk. So my theory, if it's a bad year in the cattle business, then hopefully it's a good year in the liquor business. And liquor, you know, is one of those businesses that, you know, if times are tough, then people feel like they'd like a drink to make them feel better. And if times are good, well, then they kind of want to drink to celebrate. So the liquor business is less up and down than, say, the cattle market, where you're at the mercy of the livestock prices for the week. So spreading out the risk, actually, that's one of the reasons that I really like having multiple lines of income. And it's kind of a small town trait. We tend to see small town businesses that have multiple businesses, you know, the bait shop and the tire store. I mean, it's a real joke that you would see that kind of multiple businesses, but that's because it's true. We see that in small towns. And it doesn't have to be small or separate businesses. It can be, like Carrie said, and have them all under one umbrella business with one niche that you're working with, and build out additional lines of income with that. So that's what we'll talk about. So let's, before we get into those different styles, we're going to take another poll. I want to make sure that you're still awake. So what are the risks that worry you the most? Because that may help you to decide what type of lines of income makes sense for you to add. Are you worried about losing that one big client? Yes, please vote. Please do vote. That's why we put the polls there. Are you worried about the getting left behind by the market, or maybe even never finding that market? Some people are really worried about outside forces like the economy or some natural disaster or regulations or changes there. And then other people worry about themselves getting sick or a family member getting sick. Which one of those risks kind of keeps you the most worried? Because that may help you decide what type of additional income you want to add. How's the voting look? 56% have voted.
Yep.
Corey doesn't speak to me anymore. He just types it in the chat room, and that works.
Yeah, sorry, I mute myself when I'm not talking, so it takes me a second. 56 have voted. This quick poll should be over your screen right now. It takes the place of the webinar screen viewing. So if you haven't voted, be sure to do that, please. It really helps us out.
Ooh, Bill's got a good scenario. What if there's a major martial law scenario that shuts things down? I tell you what, anything can happen. Anything can happen. So, and all of us have different things we worry about. This took me a long time to figure out, but the things that worry me and keep me up at night are not the same things that worry anybody else. So I can always tell when I'm worrying too much because my dreams are full of snakes and spiders and problems and things that I have to take care of. And I'm sure some of you have the same problems. I don't want it to, you know, Corey gives me a hard time about having five businesses and forgetting how many I have exactly, but that doesn't mean everything runs beautifully smoothly. I mean, I have my problems too. So it's not like it's... what, some magical solution that I have. But I have figured out some things, mostly by trying things wrong and then figuring out what I ought to be doing. So how's our poll?
We're still stuck at 56%, so if you wanna,
Nobody else wants to say.
yeah.
All right. Well, show the results for us here.
Okay, let me close the poll.
Sharing poll results. Okay. You know, it's really funny because the sharing poll results does not actually show me. I have to pop up the audience view here so I can see it.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. 0% actually clicked losing that one big client. That's interesting. 50% of people clicked getting left behind or never finding a market or customers. 20% said outside forces like the economy. 30% said getting sick or being unable to work for some reason.
Okay, interesting. Elizabeth says her worry is not losing that one big client, but not ever finding that one big client. See, she'd like to have the one big client. It's a starting point, but let me tell you, nobody wants to end up absolutely dependent on just one source of income, one person that can decide not to. Carrie then points out if you have one big client, then you leverage that and get another big client. So let's move on to, I need to. Page down. So the first rule is to build a portfolio. This is the first rule for how to make this work right. I cannot imagine how ice cream, espresso, and sausage work together, but Joey's wash and dry seems to make a business out of it. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through three different ways of building lines of income. The first kind of lines of income is one-to-one. And so this is where you work directly with one other person who pays you. And so that can be coaching, it can be consulting, or it can be mentoring. It's any of that one person to one person exchange where it takes 1 hour of your time and 1 hour of their time to make any money. The second type of a line of income would be one to many. And so this would be anything where you're working with groups. Whether it's training or classes or webinars or mastermind groups, anything where 1 hour of your time, but you have direct contact with lots of people at that time. So you're leveraging a little more of your time that way. And then the third type, you can probably guess, is more on their own. So you put in the hours to create it, and then your customers use it on their own time. So 1 hour of your time is leveraged not only against many clients, but not having to be at the same time. So any kind of help yourself knowledge books and workbooks and audio and video. And this also includes physical product like retail, where 1 hour of your time, then they take it and, like liquor, they buy it, they take it. That's the way it works. So with these three styles, you need to balance. You want to have a balance of these three things. So we need to check your balance. So it's hard to kind of picture this in your head, at least for me. I like to actually see things where I can see them. So just take one sheet of paper. If you're entirely online and do not believe in paper, put it in a spreadsheet, whatever works for you. But if you'll take one sheet of paper and fold it in thirds and make one column for one to one column for one to many, and then one column for on their own. With those three columns, then write down each current line of income in the correct column and see how you come out. So how do you come out? I mean, are you really skewed towards everything you do, you have to be there? Or is everything entirely in one column? Now, if you really want to check, I mean, if you want to put a serious check on it, check it by dollars of income. Put your revenue figures next to each type. Now, how does it stack up? Does most of your income come from one type of business or another? So that's a good way to check the balance of the different lines of income that you have. So I thought it would be helpful to look through an example. Now, this is probably an example that probably none of you have ever been to Alva's Sewing Center, but in Alva, Oklahoma, which is my hometown, there is a wonderful little business called the Sewing Center, but it's also, they sell sewing machines, they teach classes on sewing, they sell vacuum cleaners, and then they do service for sewing machines. If you break your sewing machine, then Mark can fix it for you. They speak at sewing events. So, how does this break down? Selling is one to one. And servicing also, you know, your the hours of service that Mark puts in is that's one-to-one. One sewing machine he's working on for one client at one time. He can only do one at a time. The classes and speaking that Marianne does, those are one-to-many. So right now they don't have any on their own products for people, but they could easily take the kind of classes that they teach and make books or workbooks that people could buy, or they could create videos that they could sell. They could do all kinds of different things that would help them to add to that the balance of their portfolio. And Carrie says that she is actually really balanced. This is exciting. I'm glad to hear that somebody is really balanced. I am maybe not the most balanced individual. I kind of skew. I don't have enough. Well, actually, I don't, come to think of it, now I'm reevaluating everything about my business. But I'm thinking of adding more one-to-one because I don't really have much one-to-one. I have a lot of one-to-many, and I have things that are on their own, but I don't really do anything one-to-one with people. So, you know, I'm with Bill here who says he's not very balanced either, but he's got big plans. Carrie's still planning. She's headed. Oh, she said she's headed the right way. Not quite there yet. Okay. Well, we've got another poll because I love doing polls. It keeps you from falling asleep while we're all talking here. Oh, you get to hear my clock strike. I love when it's, this is my old-fashioned clock, which you can tell is actually not all that accurate in terms of time. Sheila Scarborough always makes fun of me when my clock strikes when I'm online with for people. But, you know, it's my connection to the real world there. So which models do you think you need to add next? If I just went over it in my head and realized it's one-to-one that I need to add. I have no consulting, I have no coaching, I don't do any mentoring. There's no one-to-one in my business. So that's what I need to add. So which way do you think that your business needs to go next? Do you need to add more one-to-many? Do you need more training or groups? Or are you more on, need to get more on their own kind of stuff so people can do things offline and without your direct constant input? Or are you the, you know, the rare, the unicorn like Carrie wants to be, which is very balanced? Carrie just wants to add some of everything. See, that's just building up your portfolio. Once you have a good solid balance, or you feel like you have some of each and it's in nicely balanced, then you want to add a little bit in each category. But we'll talk about what rule you use when you add more. So we've gone over why you want more than one. We've talked about the different styles that the or categories that those fall into. And the next thing we'll talk about is how do you actually go about adding that? Are there any rules that go with that? And of course, you know, there'll have to be some rules. So how's our voting going?
Looks like 60% have voted. And by the way, I just want to let everybody know the quick poll that comes up, you can actually click on that slide and push submit, and you'll be able to vote, just in case you've not done that before. And we had some people join us late, Becky, so I wanted to point them over to entrepreneurshiplab.net. Click on the live button, and that's where the group Q&A that Becky is responding to is currently being hosted at. So be sure to vote real quick. Okay, good. Now we're up to 70%.
All right.
So
we've got a really great question, which is, why would you add more one-to-one? And in terms of a business advantage, why would you do anything that takes one-to-one time? Now, Carrie has the answer. See, all I have to do is wait, and everything works out in the end. Carrie says that referrals are a great reason to do more one-to-one business. The other reason is one-to-one is what you can charge the most for in terms of dollars for your hour of your time directly charging. So that's an important factor. The third reason that I can think of is that doing one-to-one connections provides you with the deepest insight into the individuals that you're working with. And so you're going to learn more from those people that you coach or mentor in terms of what you should turn around and create for your groups, or you could what product you should create to sell for on their own time. So a person that you're working with in mentoring may ask you a question that you go, oh, I hadn't thought of that. This has happened to me. And that triggers you to create a whole new training package or create a whole new something that you're going to put out that people can use on their own. Bill says you have to know your audience profile before you can market in depth. This is true. And I tell you what, nothing helps you to learn people in depth like doing that one-on-one. So those are a few good reasons that you would want to add some one-to-one, even if you already had quite a bit of one-to-many or on their own. And I think, you know, even though you and I can't call up and get an hour of Seth Godin's time or name your business person that you think is awesome, they spend one-on-one time in depth with people, just not necessarily in the ways that we think of. You know, it's not like they have a page on their website that says, you know, one-on-one consulting, get your mentoring with this person. They build it into their business in other ways because they really do, everybody needs direct and in-depth contact with their market in some way. So how could that be? Or how would that be? Go ahead and explain a little more about your question and I'll try to address it. We're going to roll along here. Oh, the results. Yeah, Corey, give us the results. 71%. Oh, hush. Corey, go ahead.
71% said more on their own. 64% said more one-to-many. 14% said more one-to-one. And 0 said none.
See, so all of us need to improve, every single one of us. And I am one of the few. You, me and just a few others are like, oh, we don't have any one-on-one time. So... oh, okay. How cool would that be? So that really wasn't a question. Okay. So we're going to move down one more slide and talk about the second rule. The first rule was that you need to have balance in the different types. And then the second rule is to first establish and then extend. So I'm just guessing about the car wash and discotheque here that they had one and then added the other later. Carrie says she's not seeing the slides. Is there something, Corey, that you can recommend that might help?
Yeah, I was trying to see.
No slides.
Yeah, I'm not seeing them either. Maybe it's the results.
Uh-oh. Let me check. And make sure that the attention of my computer is posted on my PDF, which it is. And at my end, it shows the audience view is 100% on my slides, so okay. It's really kind of weird. Oh, and I see the audience view is actually on back on the webinar page.
Yeah. Let me see if I can't troubleshoot that. Can you give the presenter back to me real quick? Oh, there we go.
Did we get it?
Well, it's on the quick poll.
It's on the poll.
Yeah.
So now, if we can...
So you're able to see the quick poll.
I do see the quick poll. Everybody sees the quick poll.
Yeah, we can... So we see part of your screen.
How about this? Does everybody see the car wash and discotheque now?
There we go. Bingo.
Does it not look like the coolest business ever? It does. So, I told you I had more fun looking these up. What are the weirdest business combinations that I can find? And this was a good one. So, here we are. I'm going to risk moving down one slide and hope that everybody comes with me. Yay, it looks like it worked. This is the farmer's rule of first establish one business and then extend to additional businesses. So if you think about it, one thing that I've seen people do is they try to start two businesses at once or try to start multiple businesses at once. I see it sometimes in startups and I see it sometimes in just, you know, Main Street kind of businesses where people try to start a bakery and something else all at the same time. And it's just one of those things that it doesn't work very well. So to understand why I call it the farmer's rule is, I mean, take a look at farming. You don't ever hear a farmer say, this year we've just started with wheat, so we're also adding cattle, and we're going to try soybeans and millet, and then we're going to see if sunflowers are a good crop for around here, and we're thinking grain sorghum. I've been hearing about the grain sorghum. If you heard a farmer tell you that, would you think it would work? You would think they were crazy. So you don't want to do the same thing with your business. I mean, if you think about it, any new crop requires new equipment that's specialized. There's a learning curve. You have to learn what the seasons are for that particular business. It takes a while to get a feel for it and to know the potential problems and the issues of timing. But once you learn that, then it can make perfect sense. The wheat field that we're looking at there up here in northwest Oklahoma, one of the things that's really commonly done is after they harvest the wheat, then they may grow a second crop in that same ground over the summertime. And really commonly over winter, as the winter wheat is growing, they'll run cattle on the wheat to graze it. And so they're using those multiples that work to what together very well. But you have to learn that by adding one at a time. You don't want to have to start and learn all of them at the same time. And I see some of you have done that, of trying to start new ones all at the same time. You can do better if you can focus on just one. So there are a few famous businesses that have followed this rule and have done similar things. I'm always scared when I hit ahead now on the slides. But this is a famous farming example for you. If you think about it, Richard Branson did not try to start all these businesses at the same time. What he did was he decided he needed a record store. You know, that was kind of the first thing. And then he decided that he also needed a recording studio. And then he decided, you know, it's one at a time. By adding each of those businesses one at a time, you can end up with a portfolio like this. But you can't do it by trying to start them all at the same time. So that's kind of one famous example. But the way I think about it is not just famous people that try this kind of thing. But I tend to think of it that you're a farmer too. Each one of you are farmers because you want to take your time in adding those new lines. You're going to let each one get well established before you move on to adding a new one. See, Elizabeth said she started three new ones this year and learned some lessons from that. And that's the way it is. So if you'll let each one get well established, then you can move on. You can decide which ones are worth taking time away from your existing lines of business, which ones are worth it. If you're going to have new equipment or training, you can factor that in before you take time away from your existing stuff. And then you give yourself time to get the feel for it. You know, you learn the new seasons and cycles of your new business before you pour everything into that one or abandon this one and start moving on to the next one. And I think I've been guilty of that myself before. Start a new business, just barely get it started, and then turn and start something completely new because it's new and shiny. So be more like the farmer and let each one of them get established before you think of starting a new one. So, man, I have just rushed right through here. I hope you guys slow me down. We have another one, which is not really a poll. There's not a real poll to go with this. But this is a personal poll. What is the one new line of income that you are going to establish next? Just one. Just one. So I want you to actually write it down, preferably on paper. So pick up your pen, write down just one. It doesn't have to be the one. You can change your mind later, but I want you to put down your first instinctive answer of what you think the next one is going to be. And if you think, like Carrie, that the one you're working on right now is the one you need to focus on, that does count. Because you're making a decision to focus on that one. And so that counts. The other question, related question for all of us, including Carrie, and especially I think it was Bill was the other one who mentioned that they had maybe started too many things. So what is the one line of income or one business that you are going to stop doing? What one are you going to stop doing? Javier says this is the question. What is the one to stop? I stopped one this past year. I can tell you it made a big difference for me. So sometimes you have to just say, this is the one to stop, and now's the time to stop it. Bill has a good tip. Pick the one that is a hassle and exhausting. Get rid of that one. That was the one I got rid of, oddly enough. Carrie says she doesn't have any one that she's going to stop right now, but she's in the no new businesses stage. Found a good balancing point and need to grow. That's the whole idea. You know, if you think about it, do you ever think about how you do your garden or how you do your flower beds? Sometimes you have to get in there and pull out the old stuff before you can grow anything new. So sometimes it's just that kind of season that you need to do some pruning and pull some stuff out. How about just getting your husband to stop adding to the family businesses? Well, you know what? Maybe you should have brought Should have taken the recording, and then he'll know that we talked about him. There are seasons to everything. There's a time in it. You know, it's this exciting point is always the spring when all the new business is growing. But then every business has a winter period when it's time to pull out the old remnants of the old crop and prepare the ground for the next crop. So sometimes you have to let one go. So we are going to go on to our third rule, which is about how we manage our time. Here's another great business, the Triple Cheap Hauling and a barber shop. It's a definite time management kind of business where you can only be doing one of those things at a given time. So let us talk about the first aspect of this. I mean, in terms of managing your time, how do you ever know with more than one business what you're supposed to be working on right now? How do you decide where to put your attention? Are you supposed to be working on the stuff that your client gave you to work on? Do you need to finish up that new training ebook? Or should you address any one of the 800 things that you know are vying for your attention? Carrie's jumping ahead on the answers and says, check your calendar, and we are going to talk about that. There is a WordPress ticker. That's a picture from South by Southwest a few years ago. I just like the fact that the guy's working on two things at once. There at least, if not more.
That's awesome.
I figured you'd recognize the guy. He's probably some known WordPress guru, and I didn't even know who he was. Okay, so know your goals. This is the first step in it. In trying to figure out what do I work on first, know your goals. That means for each and every business, you have to know what your priorities are within that line of income. And then that way, that helps you know what to work on next. So I actually keep a folder. I keep a folder with one page for each line of income. And then I've done it before of writing on sticky notes, so I could then rearrange them and decide, okay, the priority this week is this one, and move it up and move it down. And now I just write right on the page. But I do keep it on paper where I can see it, and I can actually flip through and look at each business or each line of income and go, what's the next goal in this line? And then I can pull that out to work. And this is where we get to what Carrie said, which is use your calendar. You have to use your calendar. But you have to use your calendar in a very specific way, which is planning at least by the week. You need to plan at least by the week. Before I ever start my work week, I sit down and I review those projects in my folder, all the projects. I decide which actions need to come next and decide what day those are going to happen on during the week. Now, if I tried to pack all that into Monday, how much of it would get done? Maybe one thing. So instead, I assign them to different days. And I can use Google Calendar to track all my timed appointments when I have to be someplace at a particular time. And I like weekly view, but it doesn't, you know, on Thursday, you can't see anything that's coming up. So I use a two-week view in Google Calendar. You can set that as your custom view and set that as your default. And then you can see 2 weeks at a time. It's kind of a little perspective changer. So, and then between those appointments and the next actions that I know I need to do on my goals, and then I limit each day. You'll notice there's only like 6 lines for each day. And so I limit each day to only 6 things per day. Carrie's really smart. Carrie says that she starts and ends her week with a business admin time to review and plan. None of us, I'm really bad about that too. I do that every week before I start, but I don't necessarily do it like at the end of the week as a review. I'm always looking ahead to the next week. Bill does the same thing because he's a smarty also. So here, I said there were only 6 things. So why 6? What's the magic of 6? The 6 things list is something that I stole from, this is a really old story. This is back from the early 1900s. Charles Schwab was the head of Bethlehem Steel Corporation. There's probably no one here as old as I am who remembers Bethlehem Steel. I don't remember it existing, but I've heard of it at least. Or Charles Schwab, for that matter. And Ivy Lee was the consultant who walked in and offered to increase productivity of the people at Bethlehem Steel. and he would let Schwab decide what the results were worth. So Schwab said, yeah, go ahead. So what Lee did was taught each executive to sit down at the end of the day, and create a list. That list must contain only the six most important things to be completed the next day. And each morning they should start the day by working on the first item on that list and not move on until it was completed. So after a few months, Charles Schwab sent a check to Ivy Lee, the consultant, for $25,000. So I took that number and I went and adjusted it for inflation, and that is worth about $500,000 in today's money. That's what that advice was worth to Bethlehem Steel at the time. And Javier, I'm going to get to that question about two really big businesses and devoting time to both of them, and I'm going to talk about that in the next section. But before we move off of this six most important things list, I want to talk about some lessons from that little story. The first lesson is that there are not 36 most important things. There are only six. You'll notice that they are not urgent things. They are the important things. And there's a difference. Urgent just means somebody else wants you to do it. Important means it matters to your goals. So it's the six most important things. Each thing is not an entire project, but it's a doable task. So if you put down solve world peace, that is not one of the six things. That is a big project and it goes in the project folder. But if the important thing is check in with Corey to prepare for the webinar, then write it down. That's a thing that can be accomplished within the day, given the amount of time you have available. Another secret of this is to do it at the end of the day. If you try to do it at the frantic scramble that happens at the beginning of the day, it will not happen. You have to do it at the end of the day. My friend Sheila also says that you do it at the end of the day because if you have just finished working your way through a tough day, you are so much more realistic about what you can accomplish during a day. Whereas in the very early morning optimism, you're like, I can take over the world, and you'll put all of it on your to-do list for the day. No, do it at the end of the day where you're feeling more realistic about what you can accomplish. And then finally, it is daily. This is every day that you do this. So six most important things that you can accomplish during the day, do it at the end of the day, every day, and use that as your starting point for the next morning. So that's the six most important things list. And you can see here I actually have a calendar that has a space to put your six most important things list right at the top of your day, every day on your calendar. That's how important it is. I think it's really very important that, and this is probably one of the biggest secrets to my productivity, is I really do use that calendar that only has lines for six things. The next question, are the six things for business only or just throughout a regular day balancing all the hats of life? Now, this is a really good question. I never write my laundry on the six most important things list unless it's like, if I don't do laundry, I will not be able to leave on my business trip tomorrow. I must do laundry. If it becomes one of the most important things for me to do that day, then I will write it on the list. I am completely a paper person. I definitely still use a little ring-bound paper calendar, and it looks like the one that we just looked at in the previous view, which is just it's a little ring-bound thing I got at an office supply store. There's only six lines for each day. I see a week at a time. That's the calendar that I use. I use that for all my plannings. Now, I'm not saying that you never do your laundry. We're going back to the laundry question. Can I write the laundry as one of my six most important things? Unless it has become one of the most important things that you need to get done that day, not urgent things, but most important things, then I wouldn't add it to my six list. But there may come a point at which you decide that it is, that is important enough to go on your list. In general, what's on my list is mostly business related. But you can balance it. I mean, it's going to be up to you to figure out what's the best balance that works for your work style. But start off with making it business only. But if you find that really important personal stuff is still sliding by, then you might add some personal things there. Or Carrie, you mentioned having a top six for each area of life, and it's quite possible you're going to end up with too much to get done in a day if you do that. But I can see having maybe a business related six list and a personal related six list to be done in one single day. As long as you're keeping, in that case, you're going to have to keep the items themselves really quite short. The particular items that you put into your day are going to need to be things you can accomplish during the day. So keep the item size relative to how much focus time you can give to them. So we're going to move from the six most important things. We're going to finally go back to Javier's question, which is, what if you have more than one really big business? How do you handle this? And this is another secret along with the six list, one of those things that nobody ever hears, but you only do one at a time. If you try to work on more than one of those big businesses at the same time, you will only drive yourself crazy. So if you look at any one particular day in my life and my business, I'm working on each business one at a time. So recently we've had this huge project at the liquor store of installing a new point of sale system, which is abbreviated POS, and it's abbreviated POS for a reason. It's because it takes a lot of time to implement a system like that. So a lot of my days have been really skewed right now, with a lot of time focused on the store. But then in the afternoon or at a different time of the day, I'll turn my focus to a different thing. So it's keeping the focus on one single thing at a time that allows it to work. And now, even I was at the store working on the installation, and I received a call about a speaking engagement, and so I walked away from the POS so that I could focus in on that speaking engagement and answering their questions, and then turned my attention back. If I tried to continue doing both at the same time, it doesn't work as well for me and probably for any of us. So focus on doing one at a time. I'm so amused that Carrie's sons install point of sale for fast food places. Can't believe there's a point of sale connection here within the group. That's great. I'm not sure, really. I mean, I get a lot of interruptions. I have to switch back and forth between tasks. I have to keep my focus on what I'm doing, and I'm not sure that that is any worse than any traditional office job where you're going to get meetings and phone calls and distractions and people dropping into your office or working in a common area. So to me, at least, although I have a lot of things going on, I don't think it's any worse than what most people face. Now, I do have a secret, another secret. I guess there are a lot of these that are kind of secrets. I just don't ever talk about this, I think, is the deal. But for me, having a mission helps. And that's why this picture is here, is because behind my head it says, "Do small towns have a future?" My central mission is that I help small town entrepreneurs prosper, so they in turn will help their communities prosper. That's my mission. So any project that comes to me, it's so easy to run it through that filter. Does it help my mission? Yes, no. And that makes it a lot easier to kick out a lot of things that sound interesting or cool, or that, you know, it kind of fits. It's so much easier to say no to those things that don't fit perfectly when I know what makes great sense for me. So having a mission makes a big, big difference for me. Which is what, you know, if you think about it, why am I doing this talk right now with you, is because it fits my mission. Some of you are based in small towns. Working with Corey, we try to make sure that it targets some people that are in rural areas and reach out to people that this will make a difference to their personal prosperity. I want you all to prosper. That's why we're doing it. And we've got another one of these. This is an old tip. This has been around. I didn't make this tip up, but I have seen that it really works. And that is, how you are dressed influences how much you get done. Javier says that Chris Lima has some posts on saying no that are very worth reading. I'm wondering if that was the one that CeCe Chapman linked out to a few, maybe months ago. There was this meme going around of everything should either be a hell yes or a no. If you cannot enthusiastically say, hell yes, I want to do that, then say no. And that's a good category too. But knowing what your mission is, there's something really special that each one of you is contributing to the world. So knowing what that is helps you to really focus on doing just the ones that matter. And Bill says he does this. He comes downstairs dressed to go to work. It makes the biggest difference. You really do feel different when you are dressed well. Javier says he does the same thing. And I notice that shoes make a difference for me. I don't know why this is, but if I'm wearing my shoes, I get more done than when I am sitting around relaxed with my shoes off. I don't know, but that's the way my brain works. And now I'm not saying that you need to dress for success every single moment in your home office, but if you have a day that you know is going to be very important, dress up that day. And I am telling you, you will get more done. Dress for work. I mean, a pretty good guideline would just be if you were going to have an important business meeting or you were going to have to give an important presentation, what would you wear? And dress like that. And just one other example of a person that, an example I ran into was I was talking to a person and it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And that person told me they still hadn't had their morning shower and they were hoping to get time for that. And do you really think that does not affect productivity? When you feel that far behind and you are still sitting around in your pajamas and feeling like you need to get around, I think that will definitely affect your productivity. I understand the appeal of being dressed down, and I dressed pretty relaxed in my home office. I really do. But on days when I know that it's important, I dress nicer and I stay dressed like that for as long as I need to stay focused. Like I said, shoes make a difference for me, and so I tend to wear my shoes when I know I need to be more businesslike. And if you at least use it selectively, just kind of test it out, see if it doesn't work for you. Carrie also says you never know when that webcam is on, and so it's important to dress nice when you know the webcam is going to be in. If you're going to have a video meeting, you definitely don't want to get caught flat-footed there. Bill says the NSA is watching us all right now. So I'm wearing a T-shirt for the Tulsa Shock that I picked up at the Social Media Tulsa conference. So I'm not exactly dressed for complete success, but I am here and we are focused. So that is the last of the productivity tips. And that brings us to our last official poll. So we have a poll to launch here. And that is, what's your biggest time challenge? For some people, it's probably knowing your goals, just getting clear on exactly what you should be working on. I think a lot of people, it's focusing and knowing, being able to work on one at a time. Just because there are so many things begging for attention at the same time. And then I think probably getting interrupted. I could be wrong. I'm thinking that's going to be popular. I'm trying to skew the voting here.
Half the people have voted already. So to vote, just click on one of the selections and press submit, and that'll allow you to vote.
Yeah, if you don't hit submit, then your vote, we won't count your vote. The internet has made focus a lot harder. That's one of the trade-offs we face. We have access to the assembled knowledge of humanity, and we want to play with it at all times because it was so. For those of us that didn't grow up with access to the assembled knowledge of humanity, it's so cool that we have it. It's easy to get distracted off into it.
Well, if you haven't voted, be sure to do so. We're on a dead tie, so I won't say which ones,
Oh,
but
it's a tie.
Yeah,
your vote counts.
So we need you to vote for the quick poll. Just go over. It should be over the top of your screen right now. Click on one of the three little radio buttons and then push the submit button.
There is a big difference in knowing what you are supposed to do and then actually do it. This is true for all of us, that we know what we should do, but getting around to actually do it. And that's why those multiple layers of the tips that I gave. Having a folder where everything is laid out, each line of income, I know what the projects are in each one, I have goals for each one. Going through that at the end of the week, deciding what should be the priorities for this coming week, scheduling it into the calendar so that I know when I'm going to be able to work on it, and then only assigning each day the important things and knowing that I haven't overcrammed my days, that helps me to get to more of that stuff that I know I should be doing. And so I know if something got pushed down, it was because I made a conscious decision about the priority. And I focused more of my priority to something else. And so this big project with the retail point of sale system has eaten a lot of my time and made me push a lot of things off to the side. But that was a deliberate decision to be, because I know that that will have a large payoff down the road for my business. So I made that decision consciously. Let's hear the poll results.
Okay, I went ahead and closed the poll, and we still have a tie, so I'll break the tie.
No!
I would have picked focusing on one goal at one thing at a time would have been mine. So 45% of people said that, focusing on one goal at a time. 45% said, knowing my goals, I have lots to do but not sure what's first. And then 9% said, I get interrupted. I just want to be alone.
Oh, see, I was wrong. I was just sure interrupted was going to be the most popular one. But it's interesting that the tie is knowing what direction and then picking and focusing on one at a time. So interesting that those are the two big ones right there. So you've got some new tools in your toolbox to help you address those, and hopefully those will make it easier for you. So I'm going to see if I can't rest attention back to the slides. Like that. Ha! See, now that I know that I just have to tell it twice that I want to go back, then it goes back. Okay, so we're down to, that's the end of all of the topics that I'm going to cram into your head. And hopefully it's not too much all at once there. There will be a recording of this. Hopefully the recording will come out nicely and we'll be able to share that back so you can listen to it again. But we're going to take questions. So right into the to the chat box there at entrepreneurshiplab.net live. Go ahead and put your questions in there and we will we'll try to answer them. And the recording is going to get posted probably on both our sites.
Uh-huh. Definitely your site, and we'll post one here, but I'll get that recording later tonight over to you so we can do that.
Okay. So this was one of my favorite multiple businesses. This is actually a business card that I found, which was buy, sell, and trade homes and farms and ranches and businesses and real estate and oil and gas leases, and they rent a restaurant and a motel and a club. So that's a pretty great example of a really diverse set of lines of income. So Elizabeth asks about managing all the different social media streams on disconnected businesses. And Bill has a really good suggestion there, which is Hootsuite is really good at managing multiple social media accounts. I use TweetDeck for managing my multiple Twitter accounts. Most of my, you know, the Cattle Ranch doesn't tweet on its own, doesn't have its own social media stream. The liquor store has a really small social media stream comparatively. And then primarily I have my own personal social media streams. And that kind of acts as the umbrella for all of my presence. What I think we would call that personal branding. My personal brand stands for my brands underneath me. But not everybody is that going to work for them? Elizabeth has rephrased it a little bit. So how to engage in the different social, in the different businesses, social media streams. I'm not sure if you're asking about how to manage that, Oh, and still run the business. So how do you find time to do social media for all of the different businesses and still actually, you know, do the business? Boy, there's a whole topic on how to manage your social media time. The best way that I can find that is the checklist. Get yourself a little checklist of the two or three things you want to accomplish with the social stream on each business and use that checklist daily. And have a set time or a set pair of times, or a lot of people like to do it just before lunch or they do it at the end of the day, but pick different times, have a checklist for each business. So in business one, I want to write a new blog post each week. So, you know, my set time to write blog posts on that is I'm going to be on Sunday afternoons. I do my writing. On these two streams, I like to reply to five different people out of the blue. So put those on the checklists and put them at times. Curious pointing out, if you can research the best time for you to post, that does help, but it may be more important that you work it into the time that you have available. So balance between optimal time for posting based on statistics and optimal time for posting based on I will actually get it done. Keep those two things in balance. Bill has a really great point, which is limit your posting to things only the things that are pertinent to your mission, which is really a good point. You know, a lot of us get trapped in the idea of we have to be present all the time, and that keeps you from doing the things that are most pertinent and most important for your mission. Think of it as the urgent versus important thing again. What would be the most important things that you could do on social media that would have the biggest effect for your business? And then Carrie also points out you can schedule some things to post. One of the things I do is I use some very selective automation for sharing my small town business. I do a lot of reading for small town business stuff, of a lot of news stories and blog posts that people are writing in the rural space. I share those links, they go to my Twitter, and from there they end up going to Delicious, and then those links also go to my Facebook page, and then there's also a paperly summary of those, and then they go one more place that I can't think of where it is right now, but that is to Twyla. There's a Twyla summary of the links from my page, but all of that happens automatically. The only part I did was put the link into Buffer, and then it starts through that process automatically. And Buffer spreads them out through the day so that all my links don't go out all at one time. And so I do that in one account that is set up, and it says clearly, this is where I share links about this subject. So that helps let people know what they should expect there. If you want the chatty version of me, that's at Becky McRae. But the links version is at SB Survival. So that way people know what to expect. So the people that are just looking for links can go to that account, and that process just kind of scrolls through. And it looks like Bill does a similar thing as well as Carrie, which is using Buffer and if then this that to move things through an entire process. For me, that makes sense because I'm making the links available in different ways based on how people want to receive them. You can choose. Are you a Twitter head and you want to sit and watch for my links? Do you want to just read the paperly once a week? Do you want to look at my Twyla because you hate Twitter and anything that looks like Twitter just makes you nervous? Or, you know, they also go to LinkedIn, and so people that like LinkedIn can see them there. But it's intended to be allow the reader to choose what form they want to receive those in.
So I have a question. You, Becky. Okay, so you're managing multiple businesses, and you know, you mentioned really briefly about personal branding. So as an entrepreneur, let's say in Alva, you're known as you have a liquor store, you're a rancher, all those different things, but people probably also know you in your different audiences as, you know, the Travel Currents or, you know, the different things. How do you keep all that kind of straight when you're managing your own personal brand? It would seem like you've got different audiences a part of what you're doing, obviously. I mean, people that maybe are your patrons at the liquor store, you know, may never care about, you know, the blog or the book or anything like that, but how do you keep all that straight? And what suggestions do you have about personal branding for entrepreneurs of multiple businesses?
That's a really interesting question. I don't think very many people in Alva know that I blog or that I have written a book. It was finally in the newspaper a year after the book came out. There was a really great article that a friend of mine wrote the article for the local newspaper. So, you know, my personal brand here around Alva is just, you know, that I'm Ola May's granddaughter, I think, is my personal brand around Alva, like many other small town people. I think that is, how do you establish your social media presence for all your different businesses and keep it straight? I'm going to go back to first establish and then extend. Don't try to establish your presence in a lot of different markets all at the same time through social media. I was already established as just a person that talked about small business in social media on various sites long before we started with Tourism Currents. And Tourism Currents is more focused on the market of people who work professionally in tourism. These are convention and visitors bureaus, chambers of commerce that have tourism assignments, people like that that work professionally in tourism. So that was a whole different audience than small business people. And Sheila Scarborough and I together built that. That was another thing that was helpful for me, was that I was not the only one trying to build a social media presence there. That presence then, having already established one in small business, then it was easier to establish a second one in and around tourism. So establish one and then extend to another. Don't try to establish them all at the same time, or you'll go nuts.
So Small Biz Survival came first, then Tourism Currents came second, kind of a niche-focused thing of a bigger topic that you were kind of branded around.
Right. I was already established in the business and small business. That was mostly associated with my own name, and then expanding out into tourism. And then I think, in terms of making a big shift towards focusing in on rural topics and small town topics, I've actually shifted both of those. My part of the presence for Tourism Currents is more about the small towns and rural things that apply to tourism, because how you do tourism in a small town is different than how you do tourism if you are in Chicago. And then in terms of my personal brand, or all my personal presences, then I just started talking more about rural issues there as well. And I changed my writing at Small Biz Survival. I've narrowed up our focus, and we talk more about small town business issues. Try to make sure every story has some connection to small towns, that are how that's different than doing business in Greater Dallas, Fort Worth.
So one follow up question, and if anybody else has another question, we'll see if we can't get to another question before we wrap things up tonight. But so, did you set out to have five businesses?
You caught me taking a drink of water there. I just about let that go.
So did you imagine that you would be here with this diverse amount of business projects?
I don't remember that I ever sat down and said, what I really want to do is all these things at once. But it's a very small town kind of thing. A lot of people that have any agricultural business also do something else. I mean, it's so common that people that have a farm or a ranch also have a job in town. That's kind of taken for granted, that if you have cattle, you're also going to have a real job or another business, something else that helps make up the income, just because that's just the way it is. And then, did I really set out to have a lot of businesses? I don't know. I think I kind of grew up, my parents were entrepreneurs, and so I kind of knew that I would always have my own businesses on the side. And even when I worked as an employee for somebody else, I had something going on the side. So I don't know that I ever sat down and made a conscious decision and said, boy, I really need like six businesses. That's what I really need.
So your parents were entrepreneurs as part of your lifeblood. My grandparents, not my parents, but my grandparents were both Both my grandfathers were entrepreneurs, so it's in your blood. And then obviously you're saying that I can see that growing up in a small town myself, where people have multiple interests and things like that. It's very interesting. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, if there's any more last questions, then feel free to throw those in the chat room. Javier and Bill, thanks both of you for listening in. And thanks to everybody, Carrie and Elizabeth and everybody that's been active in the chat room, and even those of you that are lurking and weren't real active, I'm glad you tuned in. I think it was a really fun topic, and I hope it's helpful for those of you to balance out your portfolio, have a little better balance in your businesses, and maybe take, if you don't do anything else, do the 6 list, okay? Just do the 6 most important things list.
That's great. Well, we sure appreciate you being a part of the eLab tonight, Becky, and sharing your expertise, experience, and your passion with the community here. We had a lot of new people here tonight, probably coming obviously from your audience and stuff, and so power-packed. And the 6 things, I think, was one takeaway for myself. So we sure appreciate you, Becky. And then I'm going to post her Twitter in the chat room here in a second so you can say thanks via social media and spread the good news about all that Becky's doing. Also, BeckyMcRae.com is her kind of personal brand site. You can learn more about her book and try to, you know, figure out all the things she's into and try to follow all her stuff. But we hope to have Becky back here very soon as her schedule allows. Always great hearing her present to us.
Thank you so much for having me and letting me share in your community as well, Corey. I always have fun doing this with you, and we will find another topic that we need to do one of these days.